Oh, welcome to episode one of the Aeroplane Podcast. I'm Errol English.
And I'm Mitch Boyer.
And in season one of this podcast, we're going to be talking about my journey to getting my instrument rating, which started last September.
So tell me about what was the moment that made you decide to get your instrument rating? Because I know you've been you had your private pilot's license for a while.
Yeah, so I got my private pilot license in 2016. And, you know, I think like most pilots, I'd always wanted to get my instrument rating, but I never wanted to actually do the work to get it because I'd spent so long. It took me about 18 months to get my pilot's license. And then I immediately joined the Westchester Flying Club. And then it took me another almost year to actually get checked out in the airplane, and for like a number of reasons. Like, number one, the Westchester Flying Club standards for how I needed to be able to fly that plane were significantly higher than, you know, the FAA standards for being able to fly an airplane. It was a new airplane. I learned how to fly in a Cessna 152. The Flying Club's entry-level plane was an Archer 181, so 180 horsepower Archer, which is significantly more powerful than a Cessna 152, right? And I had learned to fly in an untowered airport, and I at the Westchester Flying Club were flying out of the Westchester County Airport, which is, you know, very busy airport, tons of business jets, tons of just general traffic. You're also speaking to New York Approach a lot when you're flying in. You have to be careful of the New York Class Bravo airspace when you're departing in certain directions. So it was just a lot more. There's a lot of reasons why it took me a long time to get checked out. I broke my elbow at one point, so that, you know, delayed things.
You need that for flying?
Yeah, you need it, especially. You know what? I think in a Cessna, I would not have needed it because, you know, it was like I fractured it. It wasn't like a compound fracture or something, uh-huh. But in an Archer or like a Piper, you have this big flap lever on the floor that you have to pull, and it was my right arm, and I just couldn't do it with but if it was just like this little electronic flap lever like in a Cessna, I probably could have done that, but it was just like that weight of pulling up the flap lever was way too much for anyway. So I spent all this time getting my private pilot's license, and then I spent all this time getting checked out in the Piper. The last thing I wanted to do was start training on a new rating. I wanted to fly, and I wanted to, you know, really, you know, start going places. But as, you know, most of the people here who are pilots know, if you don't have your instrument rating, you're really limited in what you can do. You know, like how far you can go. You can't really plan to do anything. And so I did a bunch of stuff. I flew to Canada once, to Windsor, Ontario, for a family thing. I flew down to North Carolina, to Cape Hatteras, which I went to because there were thunderstorms at Kitty Hawk, which is where I really wanted to go. And then I did a bunch of flying around the area, like Boston and Martha's Vineyard and East Hampton and that kind of stuff. But there was this moment that, and okay, so to pull back for a second, there was also, I'd always kind of thought about becoming a commercial pilot, but I thought that you needed to have 1,500 hours and an airline transport pilot certificate in order to become a commercial pilot. So in my head, I was like, you know, I'll become a commercial pilot when one day I naturally just get there. When I have like 1,500 hours after like 5 or 6 or 7 years of flying for fun, then I'll, you know, make a career change.
Is there like a normal route most people take before they become a commercial pilot?
So the route that I thought everybody took, I thought everyone took one of two routes. Either you joined the military, got a ton of hours that way, became a great pilot, and then went and joined like the airlines or something. Or the route that I saw people taking when I was learning to fly was you would go get all your ratings and then become a flight instructor, and then just rack up 1,500 hours as a flight instructor, and then go join a regional airline. And so I really thought those were like the two normal paths to becoming a pilot. And I had no desire to become a bus driver of the sky. Like whenever I thought about being a commercial pilot, the idea of going through security at JFK every day, it was not my idea of like a fun experience. Or like flying like a Delta jet. I thought like part 135, like charter operators would be fun, or something like that. Like, or, you know, if, you know, any number of the situations where like every day is different, you're doing like different types of things, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyway, so I was just flying for fun, and I had this thing in the back of my head. And then one day I flew to Boston to visit a friend. And when I was waiting for the plane to get fueled up to fly home, I overhear this conversation with a this guy who had just flown in on a Gulfstream. He flew in. He was the pilot, and he had a flight attendant. And they were talking. They had just flown in from Westchester, and they were at, I think, like Hascom Field, just outside of Boston. And their plans had changed while they were en route, and the flight attendant needed to go back to Westchester County Airport. And so I'm hearing them talk about their options. And since, you know, they're in Boston and she needs to go back to Westchester, she has basically two options. One is to rent a car and drive back, and the other is to take a cab to Logan Airport and take a shuttle flight to LaGuardia, and then take a cab to Westchester County Airport, which, you know, would be about, either option would be, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours by the time you're like said and done, maybe a little bit more even.
Which is crazy when you think about how close Boston is.
Yeah, and, you know, in the Gulfstream, it's about 20 minutes. So she had left, and I think, like, to think about it from her perspective, she left Westchester County Airport 20 minutes ago, and now she's looking at 4 or 5 hours, maybe more, with like renting the car or waiting for the flight or whatever she decided to do to get back. And so I was standing there thinking, like, should I offer her a ride? But, you know, I was like, you know, I'm flying a Piper Archer. I'm a 150-hour pilot at this point. And I thought, there's no way that if I offer her a ride, she's going to accept, you know, or there's no way that her boss is going to be able to let her get on a plane with some random guy and fly back. And so I kind of like in my head was like, you know, I was almost embarrassed to mention it. And so finally I just decided to, and I turn around and I say, hey, I'm going to Westchester right now. If you want to ride, you know, I'm empty. I'm by myself. And their reaction was just the total opposite of what I expected, which I almost expected to get laughed at, right? And, you know, because, like, if you're, like, I don't know. I feel like if you're just in Boston in a car and you overhear a conversation in, like, a Starbucks, you're like, oh, I'm driving back to New York. You want a ride? People would be like, no thanks, buddy.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. And then flying in an airplane is completely different because you're not just in a car at sea level. You're, like, 12,000 feet in the air. And they've got their own set of controls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were flying, I think, at 3,000 feet. But, okay, but the yeah, they have their... She has her own like, yoke, her own pedals. Uh-huh. She has access to all the, like, power and electronic... All the controls. Everything's right there. And so, I mean, I suppose you're taking a bit of a risk. But, you know, she's a flight attendant for a Gulfstream. She's probably been vetted at this point,
hopefully,
you know?
Hopefully she doesn't just decide to, like, take over halfway through the plane. And she's just like, my airplane.
Yeah. So,
like, what?
Yeah, I felt pretty safe on that front. So anyway, so I asked this question, and I got the total opposite response than I was expecting. They were, like, so eager to take me up on it. And, you know, the pilot, like, turns to his flight attendant. He's like, are you okay with that? And she's like, yeah. And so I, like, clarified. I was like, you know, I just want to make sure, you know, it's a single engine piston airplane. That's okay, right?
It's not a Gulfstream.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And so the pilot was so grateful. He started, like, offering me things. He's like, you know, what do you want? Like, what can I do for you? And I was like, I already paid my bill. Like, you know, nothing. It's fine. It doesn't cost me anything. You know, I'm going back anyway. But he kept on like asking things like, and then I think at some point he's like, "Do you want a job?" And you know, being a 150-hour private pilot without an instrument rating or anything like that, I was like, "Well, no."
Wait, no, you didn't want a job, or you were just worried that?
Well, I was just like, I'm not qualified for any job that you're offering, right? And but that got us talking, and I think I asked him something. I was like, "Well, you know, don't you need an ATP license to?" And he's like, "No, you don't. Like, not if you do if you're flying left seat, but not right seat." And I just assumed, I thought that everybody on the flight deck of any plane that was flying for hire had to have their like ATP. But that was wrong, and he told me that was wrong, and then so we started talking about it. He's like, "No, you get your instrument rating, you get your commercial rating, and you know, obviously for Gulfstreams, you get your multi engine, and you're good to go as long as somebody will hire you." And so he wrote down his name and his number. He's like, "Give me a call, and we can talk about it if you want." And so I fly his flight attendant home, and I give him a call, and I start talking to him about it. He's like, "Yeah, go get your instrument rating, your commercial, and you know, give me a call when it's done, and we can talk about it." And you know, I don't like to do anything based on, you know, the promises of one individual, especially something that's like that big a commitment, exactly. Right?
Change your whole career and
yeah,
like. Invest all the time and money.
That yeah, based on the promise of some dude I just met in an airport.
So you don't need any certification. You can fly. It's okay.
So I did some research, and there are options out there. There's lots of stuff where you can start flying with a few hundred hours. Yeah, I mean, there's an airline in Alaska that will hire you. It's like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. For I think their minimum is 250 hours or something. It's
250 hours.
Yeah, which I think might be the minimums for a commercial pilot's license. And I can't remember what you're doing, but you're flying like small planes. I think you're flying like mail or something or packages. But the point is, you know, you don't need 1500 hours to get started, right? And people will start paying you much at much, and you're not making much money, but you know, you're not spending money, and so there are like lots of different options. There's seaplane operations that will hire people in the right seat at I think like 300 hours or something. There's just all kinds of options out there. Cape Air starts hiring people at 500 hours, I believe. So anyway, I learned all this after talking to this guy, and so I was like, you know, I guess I'm gonna go do it. I'll actually go get my instrument rating, and you know. You know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, I didn't understand what I was taking on. I was like, "This will be great. I'll get my instrument rating. It'll take me a month. You know, I only need, well, I think the requirements are 40 hours of simulated instrument time or simulator actual instrument time. You have to do one cross-country flight that's 250 nautical miles, I believe, and like three approaches at three different airports, and I think that's it. There's like a handful of requirements, but when you just list them out, it seems so easy, right? And you have to do the FAA written test, which is like 50 question multiple choice test. And so I was like, "Oh man, I'm gonna have this thing knocked out so fast." You have to have 15 of those 40 hours need to be with an instructor. You already have some of those from your private pilot. So I was like, "Oh, this would be so easy. I'll get my 15 hours with an instructor, and then I'll do the rest of the hours with like a safety pilot, and that'll be it. I'll have my instrument rating."
All right. So let me ask you this: it is June 28th when we're recording this.
Uh-huh.
When did you have that kind of conversation with yourself in the head? It will be easy.
So that was the end of September, the very beginning of October.
So it only took you a month.
That's right. I got my instrument rating last Wednesday, which would be June 20th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So if you're doing the math at home, that is exactly 1 month it took me to get my instrument rating.
1 month and several more.
That's right. So that's the end of episode one. In episode two, we'll talk about getting started with my instrument training and what those first few lessons were like.